In association with iFanboy, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Well, the New York Comic Con was about a week and a half ago, and we've got some great coverage for you from the floor. You're not going to believe some of the people that we talked to at this year's New York Comic Con. I got to tell you, this year was more challenging than San Diego was. And I know I didn't do floor interviews at San Diego, but this year for New York Comic Con, I had to catch up with some old friends and also meet new friends. And I am so pleased that this episode of Word Balloon has such an international flair. We've got people from Scotland, from England, from Australia, from Spain. Things were so nuts on the convention floor that some people I had hoped to speak to, there was just no time and no room to talk to them in subsequent days. It was just crazy. 95,000 people in a much smaller convention center in New York than we have in San Diego, but still a very good time. On this episode of Word Balloon, you're going to hear from Billy Tucci. He's going to be talking about his work on the DC War books, like the Sergeant Rock special miniseries, and that recent one-shot of Mademoiselle Marie. Also about rebooting his creator-owned series, She, for the 21st century beginning next year. Nicola Scott joins us and talks about her upcoming run on Teen Titans with J.T. Krull. Ryan Dudleavy and Fred Van Lente preview issue 5 of their History of Comics, Comic Book Comics. Trevor Goring joins us to discuss his new IDW 3-part World War II series. Colorist Paul Mounts talks about his Marvel work. The entire creative team from Vertigo's Scalp, that's Jason Aaron, R.M. Guerra, and Julia Brusco all get together and talk about their book. Stuart Moore is here to talk about his work for IDW, Marvel, and a new OGN, Shadrach Stone from Penny Farthing Press. Walter and Louise Simonson join us to talk about some future work coming up. John Paul Leon joins us to talk about a new Batman miniseries with Kurt Busiek. Cliff Chang comes on to talk about his upcoming run on Zatanna with Paul Dini. Jamal Igel talks about wrapping up his run on Supergirl. Christos Gage about his Marvel books, the Vertigo crime novel Area 10, his Avatar superhero series Absolution, and new work on the Captain America video game. And we wrap things up with two guys from 2000 AD. Simon Fraser, who you know from the Activate website, and Robbie Morrison are here to talk about their Nicolai Dante graphic novel, America, from 2000 AD. Plus, Simon talks about his Lily McKenzie series, now featured in the 2000 AD magazine. All that on a very extensive episode of Word Balloon. Today it's brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. DC, Marvel, and Image discounts at InStock Trades are now 37% off the standard retail price. Dark Horse now 42% off the standard retail price. How about some Nicolai Dante product from InStockTrades.com? You can pick up the Great Game trade paperback. The standard retail price on it is $17.99, but at InStockTrades.com, you'll get it for $11.33. The Hell and High Water graphic novel from Robbie Morrison, John Burns, and Simon Fraser. Standard retail price $31.50 at InStockTrades.com, $25.20. Make sure you check out all the details. I guarantee you, you will find books from all of the creators represented on today's episode of Word Balloon waiting for you at InStockTrades.com.
I'm here in Artist Alley. It's Friday at the New York Comic Con, and glad to spend a minute with Billy Tucci, who has been wowing us with his war stuff, and I was really glad to see Mademoiselle Marie, a beautiful book with you and Justiano.
Yes. Andrew Mangum did the inks on it, and Tom Chu did the colors, and it just was an illustrious job. We really kind of put it together really fast as well. It was the last of the Star Spangled books that was announced, and overall I'm real happy with it. You know, it's tough doing a one issue.
Yeah.
Try to get all the aspects that the editors want. They wanted sex and double cross and violence, and so I came up with this story that is all actually a lot of Marie's actions are based on the actions of a real SOE agent. SOE is a special operating executive, and that was the British officers and French expatriates that were parachuted into France and helped the partisans in their guerrilla warfare against the Nazis. And it's based on a real woman, and her name, believe it or not, escapes me at the moment, but it's Kay, her last name is or something like that. I'll get back to you on it.
No worries.
Yeah. The scene with the planes chasing her with the machine guns and of her driving a truck full of explosives and getting run off the road, and that's all happened to her. And the same thing with the double cross about that they were going to kill her initially and they wanted to sleep with her. And And at the end, too, she actually threw hand grenades and killed a bunch of Melisse, but I had Marie, well, I don't want to blow it for you, but...
That's all right. It's been out a couple of weeks, but it's great. And
you did like it.
Dude, I loved it.
A few word balloons dropped out. A little expositional word balloons dropped out a bit. Yeah. But overall, I'm happy with it. I'm going to see if I can find her, if you don't mind.
That'd be great. While you're looking, I'll let everyone else know that I think the great thing is that you've gotten the opportunity to do this war stuff. Your passion for these stories come through because of the research that you do.
Yes. Well, it's her last name is Wake. Hang on. Nancy Wake. Here she is, Nancy Wake.
Wow.
So Marie's exploits and adventures are loosely based off of a real SOE agent by the name of Nancy Wake. Nancy was an English woman, I believe, or maybe an Australian woman, who married a Frenchman, like an aristocrat or a wealthy Frenchman. He was captured, and she escaped back to England and parachuted into France and helped lead the guerrilla forces against the Melisse, which were the French collaborators, and then the Nazis and the Gestapo. So there's lots of little things that Marie did in it, part with a truck being pursued by the planes filled with explosives. The scene where the French partisans themselves actually wanted to double cross her. So there's a lot of things based on Nancy Wake. She's a true hero, and she's still alive. She's like 97. She lives in England.
Incredible, man.
It is. It really is.
No, that's amazing stuff. So I mean, you know, we go back to the Lost Battalion book that you did, and I think I know the veterans really appreciated what you did with that book.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's fun seeing you in the war genre, man. I mean, I really, you know, you look at she, and you don't expect to see that from you. But again, I know in our previous conversations, the passion you have for this subject and what you bring to these projects when you do them.
Yeah, I'm known for drawing women, but I think I would rather draw Tiger tanks and Stukas and paratroopers any day over hot chicks, I guess, drawing wise, to draw.
Sure, man. I'm with you.
I just love it. I just love that, and hopefully we'll have some real exciting news in the next couple of weeks that'll bring
fantastic.
You lots more war stuff.
Now, this was a one-shot that with Mademoiselle Marie.
Yes.
They made the announcement this week that they're rolling back to 299, which I think everyone's happy about.
Yeah, I think so, too.
But the one thing I'm wondering about, too, with everybody is, they're talking about cutting the page count down to 20 pages.
Really?
That's what I'm hearing. I don't know. What do you know?
I don't know anything about that.
Okay.
I don't.
Would that be a hindrance? I mean, can you still tell a smart story?
Sure. Well, I'd like to actually do... I love the... what Jimmy and Justin do with Jonah Hex, those
Absolutely.
One and done stories, like the old Our Army of War stories. I love that. The 16-page rock stories in and out.
Sometimes 8 or 11 pages
yeah,
in some
yeah,
of those.
Yeah, and they were great. Yeah, and if you get yourself in that groove to do that, it's very easy. It's just editing yourself. Same thing, I'm having a lot of fun. I just did another story for the DCU Halloween special.
Oh, terrific.
That's coming out. And it's if anyone saw the 2009 Halloween special, it's the same thing.
Sorry, this is J or K?
K.
K, thank you.
Yep.
No problem.
And that was I just saying? That very unattractive man just screwed my train of thought.
You're saying your 2009 Halloween special.
Yeah, the 2009 Halloween special, we start off with two kids. And this is a continuation of those two kids.
Very cool.
And I do a drawing in that. I haven't started it yet. I do a drawing in each one. I bought the last of the stock from Diamond of the hardbounds.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, the soft cover's coming out. I don't know if DC has more, but I bought a ball of Diamond.
It's hilarious.
Actually, Mark Nathan bought it from Cards, Comics, and Collectibles, and I just have to pay him now.
All right. So if you want a hardcover, I guess you're going to have to go to Billy Tucci for the Sergeant Rock Lost Battalion Collection.
Yes.
Very cool.
At a show near you.
But the soft cover's coming out soon, which is terrific. That's
yes.
cool.
Yeah, the soft cover should be out any day now, actually.
Excellent. What else is coming up? The Halloween special and what else?
Halloween special, a bunch of stuff I can't talk about.
All right, fair enough.
I think that's it right now that I can announce for the year. I think all my stuff is coming out that I can talk about.
Okay.
No offense. I do.
Not at all, man.
A new She-Series is coming out next year through Dark
Wonderful.
Horse.
Wonderful. All right, terrific.
We're totally reinventing the character for the 90s. For the 90s, for the 21st century.
Exactly, for the teens or whatever,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, for the teens, for the second decade of the 21st century.
There you go.
You got to think when I first came up with She, it was 1990.
How you doing, everybody?
So, yeah. Sorry.
That's all right. You know? Hey, man. That's
we're all right. Old.
Exactly.
But,
that's all right.
Now, yeah, now we're going to change it that she's actually a 16-year-old high school girl living in New York. And it's just that her parents have this past, and she uncovers it, the girl, Anna, and that leads to some pretty dire consequences. But it's very, like a ghost story, really. It's like a thriller and a ghost story.
Very cool.
So I'm real excited about that.
That's fantastic. So new She coming up, and yep. Some announcements to be determined.
Cool DC stuff is coming out.
Excellent.
So, another book I'm working on, something else I could tell you about, through... I don't know if I can. Let me see how I do this.
I'm doing
an adaptation of Alexander Nevsky, which is a 1938 Eisenstein film.
Interesting.
And it's about this Russian prince who fought the Teutonic Knights in the 13th century.
Eisenstein did Potemkin, Battleship Potemkin?
Yes. And this was Nevsky, his dream film. And so we're doing a new adaptation of that.
But how did that project happen? That's very interesting. That's left field.
Yeah, I'm wondering if I could say who did it. It's from one of the biggest agencies in the country.
Okay.
Literary agencies. They purchased the rights and have some deal with Russian government now. And it's going to be printed here in the United States, though, as well. But it's going to be a big worldwide thing. I have the pages if you want to see them. I have a whole bunch of artwork.
Very cool.
For it. And that's real exciting.
Very
I get to
draw
knights,
man.
And I'm going research nutty with that, too. So that's what I'm actually drawing. A lot of the other stuff I'll just be writing. But I will be doing another DC project, drawing that.
Cool.
So. It's fun to get a chance to work with one of my friends. I'm not very comfortable drawing from other people's scripts, but this is just going to be a hoot. I just can't wait. Just like it was with Jimmy and Justin. Jonah Hex was just
awesome.
Just
that's
great to do that.
And it was a lot of fun seeing that, absolutely.
Yeah, and it was a lot of fun, that book. And it did really well, apparently. So
I'm not surprised, man. And while he's been talking to us, folks, he's been doing an amazing quick headshot of Sergeant Rock in the inside of a Lost Battalion for us. So that's fantastic. No, it's good to see you, man. And when the announcements happen, I absolutely want to have you back, and we'll talk more.
Definitely.
Because, we haven't had a really long talk yet, Bill, and I apologize for that. You're always kind of at times to do the panels and the quick floor hits that we do. So
there's so much more important people to talk to than me, for God's sake.
No.
You got Darwin Cook's going to be here.
Oh, absolutely.
You got Adam Hughes, you know. Forget me.
No. Always happy to talk to Billy Tucci. Thanks, man.
Beautiful.
I am so thrilled to finally be talking to Nicola Scott, because I just met her in San Diego a couple months ago. You're on the other side of the world. And truly, it is a pleasure to meet you, because I've been a fan for years. And it's so funny, because I'm on one knee right now, so it looks like I'm proposing to her. So if anyone were watching, thank God it's not video. But seriously, it's really good to see you.
It's really good to see you, John. I'm so used to your podcast. When we saw each other in San Diego, it's because I heard your voice. And I was like, that's got to be John Suntress.
And seriously, that is ridiculously flattering. So thank you. And I can say the same, that every time I see your art, I am thrilled, because it's wonderful work. I'm loved your run on Secret Six.
Thank you.
Great stuff with Greg recently on, and actually, I guess it wasn't that recently, Blackest Night Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And now, looking forward to you and J.T. Krull on Teen Titans. Tell me about it.
It's going to be a lot of fun. It's back down to the core team, and they're going to be operating like an experienced team that's used to being on the front line. No more babysitting kids anymore. And it's going to be a lot lighter and a lot more fun. We're sort of allowing them to be kids again. We're hoping to God that everybody likes it.
And, you know, are you getting to draw the people that you want to draw? Because
absolutely. When they offered me the job, my first questions were, who's on the team and who's the writer? And when they told me who was on the team, I was like, perfect, perfect, perfect. And when they said that JT was writing and I read the first script, it was I was so happy. The tone that he's going for was exactly what I wanted to work on next. Teen Titans has always been one of my favorite groups, and one of the few sort of mainline titles that I thought that I might be appropriate for. So I'm really happy that I'm getting to work on them.
That's excellent. And, you know, it was so much fun seeing you on Wonder Woman as well.
Oh, it was a blast. She's my favorite character.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, I really think, you know, there are creators that really get Wonder Woman. And I mean, you know, and I'm really taking nothing away from the current continuity because I'm a big fan of Don's and I understand what Joe Straczynski's doing. But really, I mean, you know, at different times, it was fun seeing Gail on Wonder Woman. It was great seeing you do it as well. And the same with Greg.
I hope at some point in time I get to sort of have a really decent run on Wonder Woman. You know, when the time is right, I'm sure it'll happen. Fingers crossed.
Excellent. And the first story, six issues, I'm assuming?
No, our first story is four issues, keeping it short and sweet.
Sure.
We've then got, I can't tell you what the next issue is, but the first few arcs are pretty short, giving us sort of opportunities to introduce some new characters, some new villains, and just sort of letting the team do their own thing without being overwhelmed by a big story. And we're sort of working our way towards issue 100 in a year's time, and we'll have a big story kicking off from there.
Cool. The news is fresh about the price point going back down to $2.99, but with that comes the reduced page count as well. And I don't know when you were let in on that, and I'm wondering if that's affecting your storytelling and if there's things you're going to have to cut back or how that's going to work for you.
Well, when I was offered Teen Titans, we were still having a backup feature, so it was offered to me as a 20-page book.
Oh, okay.
And it's the first 20-page book that I've been working on. And as it turned out, the backup feature that's currently in Teen Titans wrapped up with this last issue. So our first issue of Teen Titans is 30 pages.
Oh, wonderful.
And until the 22-page issues kick in January, we've got 22 pages, then we're going to 20, and that's fine with me.
Cool.
You know, give me a little bit of extra time to make sure the work is really spick.
Okay. Because,
yeah,
I was wondering if there's any, you know, fudging with, you know, scripts or any, you know, condensing stories or anything like that. But as you say, you were expecting a backup feature, so it was going to be 20 pages
anyway.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, JT might be sort of needing to condense the scripts that he's got on the go. But I think we're kind of prepared for it anyway. And it's fine with me. You know, it's the first time that I'm doing covers on a monthly basis.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so it's giving me sort of a bit more time to make sure that, you know, the interior artwork and the exterior artwork look as best as they can.
Excellent. And I'm loving your DC work. And I'm more of a DC guy, I think, at the end of the day. But obviously people wonder and stuff. Any interest down the road of ever doing any Marvel stuff?
Look, there's absolutely interest. There are definitely characters that that I really love and I gravitate towards and I think I might be right for. But I'm still with DC.
Sure.
I've just re-signed my exclusive for another 2 years. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
So, you know, in 2 years' time, I'll see where I'm at. You know, there's been a few things that I've had in the works for a number of years that I've been putting off because I've been at DC. So, you know, I might take a break from mainstream comics for a few months to get that done. It all depends. You know, we'll see where we are in 2 years.
Was it Halloween Man or Halloween?
Halloween Man is a book that I've always sort of tried to get onto whenever I've got the free time, which I haven't really had much recently. But it's a really successful webcomic, and I always love doing it because Drew Edwards, who's the writer, always writes these great, fun, kitschy retro stories, and it's like Secret Six. It gives you so much scope to have a lot of fun, really play around with the ideas. So, yeah, I'd love to do some more Halloween Man at some point.
That's excellent. Well, you know, you're amazing when it comes to action or humor. Again, you've been paired with great writers that I think play to your strengths, but also show...
You're really lucky, right?
But you bring the game. That's all right. You bring your game to it as well. That's all right. No, they're equally lucky. So, no, continued success and really a pleasure to talk to you finally. And, you know, we'll have to figure out the star charts and make a proper time because I would love to talk to you more and really keep up the great work.
Will do. Thank you very much, John.
I'm kicking back with the men from Action Philosophers of Comic Book Comics. It's Ryan Dove-Levy and Fred Van Lente. It's a pleasure to see both of you. Ryan.
Hey, John. Nice to see you.
Fred.
How you doing?
Awesome. Excellent. Boys, we've all been waiting with patience but anticipation for Comic Book Comics number 5. When we last left, we were just starting the Marvel era. And, you know, I've enjoyed every issue. You guys are really knock it out. We saw it first with Action Philosophers, but it's really great to see. And then, you know, Ryan, I'll bug you first because you're carrying the heavier load in terms of the drawing and stuff.
Uh-huh.
But it really is great to see you combine a lot of real images that you guys are using in a fair way, fair use, but also with your art and everything. I mean, this is a really great documentary of the comic history.
Yeah, thanks. That's how I like to think of it too, is that we're more trying to chronicle things as objectively as possible, but, you know, just show how much love we have for the whole history and everything that's happened in the comic book industry without, you know, being respectful, but also saying, hey, this is really some fun stuff that you can get into.
Well, and tell me about some of the gags that you guys do as you set up, you know, looking at these specific times. I mean, is it, you know, is Fred writing? Are you both writing?
Fred is writing it. He does a full script for me. And then I try to throw in as much as I can, you know, whatever space allows, and, you know, just let my own goofy drawing style carry my end of the humor more so.
Well, and I love seeing Walt Disney with the Mickey Mouse ears on there.
Yeah, that was all Fred's idea. Every time I draw it, it gets more and more disturbing.
And really, if there's like any victim in this whole story so far, it seems to be poor Jack Kirby.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, unfortunately, it seems like that's kind of how his whole personal history went. Is like he just, you know, was always taken advantage of. But as you know, so many people depended on him to carry so much of the load creatively, and Jack Kirby was a real hard luck case. I mean, you know, he has a lot of our respect today, and you know, don't know what else to say.
Well, are there sections of the first four issues, or even the fifth issue that's coming out, that you know, you're particularly excited about?
I'm very excited about the fifth issue because we are doing it's our all lawsuit issue, and we're doing a whole section on that explains, hopefully, we'll break down for everybody what trademark is, what copyright is, with some milk and cheese type characters, trademark and copyright, that blast through the comic book industry, you know, screaming and telling everybody about it, and also. So we get into like a lot of the underground stuff, which is where I draw a lot of inspiration from. With the whole Air Pirates story, plays big into it. A lot of stories on creators' rights and things like that. We even get into Miracle Man for a little bit.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I was wondering, is the Blade lawsuit covered or?
Yeah, it's covered in there. Marv Wolfman does make more than one appearance, so.
Interesting. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's a checkered history, and covered very well by the boys in Comic Book Comics. And I guess issue 5, you guys have heard, tell me February.
Yeah, February. We had some I had some personal setbacks, and then it also like sort of got capped off by a meltdown on my hard drive. So we blew our diamond deadline, and so. But I'm back at work on it, and yeah, it's coming out in February.
That's cool. And good response from stores. I mean, you know, Chicago, I've been really impressed with the stores that are carrying it and stuff. And I'm pleased to say it hasn't been hard to find. Store.
That's good to hear. We've had some stores. Well, more so buyers are having a hard time finding it. Stores have no problem finding it. They can order direct from us, and they order through Diamond, and we go through those at a pretty good clip. So, we've been happy. The first two issues, though, have been sold out, which is a problem for a lot of people because, of course, they want to get the whole thing.
Sure.
A lot of people are waiting for the trade. A lot of people are, you know.
So the copies, in fact, that you have here at the con and stuff,
these are reprints that I made.
Oh, fantastic.
Just for the show.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, through Kablam.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, no, I'm telling you, man, I love the cover design for every issue, and I certainly love the interiors, and the whole thing. I mean, one particular section that I really enjoyed, too, was the whole Liechtenstein, you know.
Thanks. Yeah, Fred was really the architect of that. As far as visuals go, and that actually was one of the few stories we did where it took a lot of back and forth, with where I was misinterpreting what he was saying, and like I had to go back and revise.
Okay.
But I think that came out really well. And we both hate Liechtenstein, and I don't know if that came out. Everybody else that's been in the book, we have a lot of love for and a lot of affection for. But that was the one person that was like,
oh, I don't think I can't see how any comic fan can. I mean, it's funny, you go from as a kid liking Liechtenstein and seeing what he did, and then finding out the real story behind it, and it's terrible. Now, Fred's been conducting business while I've been talking to Ryan.
Sorry.
So we'll no, not at all, man. Okay. It's all right. Hey, man,
I'm sorry. I had to talk to superstar writer John Hickman.
There you go. Was John just by? I didn't even see him. I'm interrupting commerce. I apologize. No, we were just talking about the Liechtenstein stuff that was in there, and that's one of my favorite sections. And as I was saying, you know, you first see that stuff, and you really admire it, and then you find out that the guy absolutely stole so many images from really hardworking, you know, creators to create this.
Yeah.
ridiculously priced art.
And in Lichtenstein's, you know, defense, he definitely did. I mean, I find a lot of sculpture really fascinating. For example, you know, and he's done a lot of stuff since that period, which really he only did that in the early 60s, that, you know, we harsh on him on comics just because we like to represent, you know. We like to keep it real with our comics homies. But, you know, he definitely did other stuff later on. But, no, I agree. It's just a strange period in art history, and it's a strange period in comics history, you know, where the ghettoization hadn't yet broken free. Well, now we live in this era where, you know, I tell girls at bars I work in comics, and they're like, oh, really? You know, my 14-year-old self, you know, shamefully buying comics off the spinner rack at the drugstore in Sugar Land Falls, Ohio, would be stunned to learn how history has developed, you know?
Understood. I was asking Ryan before. I'll ask you, is there a specific section of any of the books that really, you know, you look at and go, wow, that really turned out amazing?
You mean of Compa Comics?
Yeah.
You know what I'm really looking forward to, once Ryan rescues it from his hard drive, is The Grabbers, which is a story we're doing that's about Jack Kirby's struggle and his artwork back. It's something I'm really proud of. It's an issue that I really strongly believe in, and I hope we do justice conveying what Kirby's struggle was, the struggle of Siegel and Shuster and all other creators, you know, trying to, you know, earn what they deserve for their creations.
Excellent, man. I really do love the series. I'm thrilled that it's coming back in February. Comic Book Comics, and of course, you can pick up Action Philosophers as well from the boys. That's the name of the website, correct?
It is. Comic Book Comics, ActionPhilosophers.com, and EvilTwinComicsAll.com are all tentacles of the same octopus that lead you to the same website.
Fantastic. And to celebrate Comic Book Comics number 5, I hope the boys will come back and we'll do a full discussion on Word Balloon. Hopefully, maybe we can go through the issue and everything. And you know.
Yeah. That'd be great.
Do
a DVD commentary.
There you go. I can fire off a PDF, and we'll have it in time when it hits the stores, and we can talk about it. And that's going to be a very interesting episode too, because as you guys say, that's the litigation issue. So we'll be talking a lot about the lawsuits that we've all come to know. And these guys did the hard research, and I get to sit back and be Brian Gumble and go, guys, great story. Let me ask you this.
It'll be a very special episode of Word Balloon because all three of us will sue each other during the show.
Why not? That's awesome. Now, thanks, guys. Good luck to you, and keep up the great work.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, John.
Yay! I want to take a moment right now to talk with Trevor Goring, who's Waterloo Sunset. I remember quite well, and it's a beautiful book. It's a pleasure to meet you, sir.
Good to meet you.
And you're showing me pages from your new IDW project. You're just showing me some work that you've got coming up from IDW. It's beautiful pages.
Yeah.
Tell me the title again.
It's a book called Iron Siege. It's going to be 27-page books starting in December from IDW. We're going to use the slightly larger Golden Age format, same format as the Vikings.
Oh, sir.
So it's slightly bigger, gives it more, the artwork a little bit more
beautiful
room to breathe. And it was, it's written by a couple of producers in LA who probably you don't know, Andrew Hung.
Okay.
They approached me at the, in Seattle at the Emerald City Con a couple
wonderful
of years ago. And I was looking for a project to do. And they said they had this film script they wanted to adapt, which was exciting for me because I find it really difficult working from a full script where it's all broken down, because I love like doing my own breakdowns and page counts and really laying the book out.
Yeah, you know, so it gave you more freedom too.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, because I storyboard a lot of movies and I'm used to working from a film script.
Before we start talking, you mentioned one of my favorite movies, Cobb, the Tommy Lee Jones film, and you were one of the storyboard guides on that.
Yeah, that was my first feature when I moved to L.A. from London in 91.
Wonderful.
And I got that film, and then I've worked on about 50 feature films.
Oh, right. Ran a lot of some titles.
Since then, like Gattaca.
Wonderful.
X-Men 2, Fantastic Four, The Cell, which is one of my favorites.
Oh, very good.
I've just finished work with Sean Levy on Real Steel.
Very cool.
With Hugh Jackman, based on an old Twilight Zone episode that Lee Marvin was in.
I remember it well. One of my favorite boxing stories.
Yeah.
A Richard Matheson story.
Richard Matheson, yeah. And that's got Hugh Jackman and, there's fighting robots.
Absolutely, yeah. It's really one of the classic Twilight Zones with Lee Marvin. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see that adaptation.
Yeah,
that's terrific.
They just finished shooting in Detroit in the old abandoned car factory, so that should be looking forward to seeing that.
Excellent, man. No, you know, honestly, Waterloo Sunset, it was 2005, 2006?
Yeah, around there. There was four issues from Image, and then we collected it in a trade.
And I remember it well. No, it was one of my favorite books when I really started coming back to comics and stuff. So that's terrific.
Yeah, it took me about 5 years.
Wow. Well, sorry, it was worth the wait. It was a good book.
I think I started it in Hawaii working on Final Fantasy, and I finished it in Australia working on Logan's Run, which is still which I'm still working on.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah, exactly.
That was Brian Singer. Now he's left the project, and a young guy called Reese,
okay,
who's currently doing 47 Ronin, is slated to do it next year.
Very cool.
So that should be, you know, hopefully I can get back on that and finally finish it.
How'd you hook up with all these guys?
I met Tommy Lee about 10 years ago. And I know Bernard lives in LA.
Cool.
And we had the same agent.
Very cool.
And we just wanted to do, Artist Alley in San Diego was getting a little difficult to get into. So we decided to hook up together and get a booth there. And we've been doing San Diego for the last 8 years, and we've got 4 sketchbooks that we've done. The last one was with Bill Sienkiewicz and David Lafuente. So we try to bring a guest in each issue.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
That's
fun. And this issue was like the old guard Bill and the new guard David. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
Tommy met David in Ireland, and they really got on at some convention.
Would we know any of your... Did you do British comics back
then? I worked on 2000 AD in the early 70s.
Who were some of the titles you worked on?
Oh, I did Road Trooper.
Sure. Love Road
and,
Trooper.
I'm kind of the first person who published Alan Moore.
Oh, really?
Because he wrote for my fanzine when we were both at school.
Oh, very cool.
And the fanzine seminar I just sold on eBay for like £300. So, and I've only got one copy left, so...
That's awesome.
We like Alan Moore, Dave Gibbons, Brian Bowen. We're sort of the same second generation comic book artists from England who grew up loving American comics, and that's why we started drawing. Yeah,
well, that's cool. Then you guys all came over here and made them better, made better American comics. So that's cool.
I hope so. Now I just kind of spend my time between comics and film, and
awesome.
I try to put what I learn in film storytelling wise back into comics and vice versa.
Sure.
So yeah.
And you're a friend of Gabe Hardman's, which is cool.
Yeah,
so
Gabe,
that you
yeah,
know,
Gabe and I worked on X-Men 2, and
very good.
We recommend each other for films when we're both working.
Outstanding.
So there's a like small community of guys in LA who work on, a lot of the guys who work on movies want to work on comics and vice versa, you know.
Well, it's that classic photorealistic illustrative style that I really enjoy. So
yeah.
I'll look forward to the new project. And you say November it starts?
First issue is out in December.
Oh, December. Okay,
yeah,
very
yeah.
good.
And
from IDW,
then it'll be bi-monthly for 3 issues.
Excellent, man.
And I finished the second issue, so hopefully the third issue will be on time.
Very cool. Well, yeah, I hope so. Well, that's great. When it's ready to roll, you come on and we'll do a full word balloon.
Right.
I'll get a card from you and everything. I gave my last card to Jim Steranko,
that's the truth.
Exactly.
I saw Jim. Yeah, I spent time with Jim earlier. We always like bump into each other and
very cool.
Talk about film directors and stuff. So yeah, he's a great guy. He was one of the guys that really inspired me when I was starting out.
I hear you.
What he brought into comics from advertising and film.
Absolutely.
Really kind of broke the traditional storytelling techniques.
You bet, man.
Yeah, and he's a great guy. Just really, really friendly to, I was going to say young guys, but I'm not young anymore. So.
Sorry, neither am I, man. Don't worry about it. No, it's a pleasure meeting you, man.
You too,
Joe. And good luck with the book. And like I said, I'll get a card from you, and we'll talk a little bit more on Word Balloon. That'd be terrific.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, I started doing this interview yesterday, and then my batteries crapped out, and then finally I replenished, and I'm able to talk to Paul Mounts now, the fine colorist who does wonderful work for all the big companies and all the big artists. You know his work on Dale Eaglesham and Steve Epting on Fantastic Four with John Hickman, his great work with Brian Hitch on The Ultimates, Amanda Connor on things like The Pro and Power Girl. He's always got a full schedule. How many books a month are you working on, usually, Paul?
Right now, just regularly, it's Hulk and Fantastic Four, or Hulks, I should say, and Fantastic Four. Hulks especially, it's going to be tight because it's double shipping a lot. But I've got a couple projects coming up with Brian Hitch and another one coming up with Amanda Connor probably towards the end of the year. So, you know, 2 regular series and then juggle in the other things in between.
I thought it was interesting, and I'm glad it happened, that... I know Dale Eaglesham left Fantastic Four to work on the Super Soldier miniseries with Steve Rogers, but I heard Hickman wanted you to stick around there for Fantastic Four. I'm glad to see that happen. It's a great look for the book.
Yeah, no, thanks. I appreciate that. It's really great working on Steve Epting on it, too, and I'm really hoping we get a nice good, solid, continuous, you know, non-interrupted run with Epting on it, because Hickman's one of those guys who plans out his series, you know, a year, 2 years, 3 years in advance. And to have that that solid regularity with an artist, too, makes a big difference. And Epting's the guy to do it. It's interesting. I've had so many people say they were surprised that Epting was going to do Fantastic Four, because they think of his artwork from Captain America as being much more grounded and things like that. But people forget he used to draw Avengers, which was, you know, about as big of a, you know, if-bam-boom superhero title as you can get. And Fantastic Four stuff's great because it's such a great combination of the real-world stuff and... As a matter of fact, the issue I just did, issue 584, which will be coming out within the next week or two, most of the issue is a night out with Johnny and Ben Grimm. Ben Grimm reverts back to his human form, and he and Johnny have a night out until we get to the end of the book, which something cosmic happens, which I won't reveal here, but and Steve Epting handles both with just perfect ease. It's wonderful.
Now, you do cross back and forth to the two companies. From an editorial standpoint, do the shops work differently?
You know, for a colorist, it's not that different. I mean, there's some slight differences. DC does a lot more where you're working with the production people rather than the editors, things like that. But, you know, most of my work is for Marvel. I do a few projects here and there for DC, things with Jimmy and Amanda. But
no, the great thing is, we've got people here, too, looking at Paul's prints, and it represents all the various artists he does. They're gorgeous, and it's great. In fact, you'll hear it later in the episode. In fact, why don't we cut to it right now? Somebody asks Paul some very direct questions about his transition from hand coloring to doing coloring on a computer.
I used to hand paint everything, and then in the mid-90s when we switched over to computers, I'd never touched a computer in my life, and literally the day the guys were coming to install the computer system, the scanners and everything, I was learning how to use a computer, how to use Photoshop and Illustrator, all on the same day, because I had actually accepted a job to do some computer coloring before I even had my computers hooked up. So I sort of learned it enough to get the job done in a day, but you know, it's years later and I'm still learning different things about, you know, how to use new techniques and things. That was in reference to a question on how fast you learn Photoshop. Yeah, Wacom tablet. Yeah, I do, but I don't use it that much. Mostly I just use the regular tablet and look at the computer screen.
Yeah, I don't think it's that intuitive. I like it.
Yeah, my hand's always in the way.
So anything else we want to talk about coming up?
Not too much I can talk about coming up. Like I say, there's something coming up with Brian Bendis and Brian Hitch that I can't really say too much about, and a project with Jimmy Palmiotti and Frank Thierry and Amanda Connor that's coming up like the end of the year. But none of it that I can tell you too much about right now.
All right. Well, we'll find out about the new projects in a longer interview, but I wanted to stop by and say hello. I see him all the time at the comic shops and all the Chicago happenings. It's good to see you in New York.
Great. And watch for the Hulk. I start on issue 618 with that. It's a really great issue. It's Greg Pak and Paul Pelletier and Danny Mickey. And the Abomination comes back. We get some great fights in. The Hulk and all his friends come back to Earth. And it's a good issue, good storyline starting out there. So good jumping on plays.
Fantastic. So we'll see lots of shades of green from Paul Mounts coming up.
Yeah, that was an interesting issue because you've got the Hulk and She-Hulk and Red She-Hulk fighting the Abomination surrounded by green flames. So everything is just red and green in the whole issue. It's a special Christmas issue of the Hulk that's coming out in October. So.
Excellent. He'll balance it out. There you go. Paul Mounts, everybody. Thanks for talking to us.
Hey, thanks a lot, John.
This is great. I'm talking to the whole Scalp Creative team. And Julia, what is your last name?
Brusco.
Brusker?
Brusco.
Busco. Julia Busco. I got Jason Aaron. I got R.M. Guerra. This is terrific. Guys, it's great to see everybody. And Jason, I talk to all the time. I haven't had a chance to talk to Julia or R.M. So how did you get this assignment?
I think it's pure luck. This is the word that explains it best. I was just lucky. That's all. As a start. It was just some kind of click happened and everything fit good. In a month, everything was made in a way because the plot existed. I saw it and just made a few sketches and it just clicked. So it was really easy. I think this is the word also. It was easy.
What kind of research do you do to kind of capture the look?
Well, all over. I just, you know, everything, anything. National Geographic, movies or books or you know, literature, anything. But while I do scalp, I don't watch anything. It's off. What I keep in my mind, it's what comes out. So I think it's kind of some kind of trick that I use and that could be useful to people, you know.
And what's it like working with Jason as compared to other writers?
More than impressive.
Remember, I'm standing right here
exactly.
Next to you.
I did it because he will blush. But No, it's I just, you know, each month something new risks, new panels that I didn't imagine I would do next month. It's really, and it's not because we are trying to trap each other. It's because it's really natural. It goes further and further and further. It's just pure joy. A lot of work, but pure joy.
Excellent. Julia, your colors accents the story is very good. It sets the tone of each scene. And have you worked with RM for a long time?
Well, it's been over 3 years right now, but I didn't really know him before. And I would agree 100% with what he said. It's pure luck to be on this project, pure luck to be working with him, because I don't really recall anybody else teaching me and making me grow as much as Vera did.
Wow. Well, Jason, you know, we've talked many times, and always a pleasure to talk to you. And I think the great thing is, I really think Scalp represents this era for Vertigo in a very positive way, much as 100 Bullets did, and other great Vertigo books. I mean, you know, Preacher and things like that. I mean, I think you guys have really set the tone for the 21st century with this book.
That sounds great.
I know, there's not a question in there.
I'll just say, Julia and Gara both talking about how it's luck that this all came together. That's sort of true, but we also have to acknowledge Will Dennis. All of this happened because of Will Dennis.
Yes.
Will Dennis kind of plucked me out of obscurity and gave me a shot.
Oh,
and then, you know, and Gara is not he's a fresh face to the United States on Scalped, but he's a veteran of the comic book industry and has done tons of amazing work, you know, in France and Spain over the years. So has Julia. Julia has done tons of amazing work for Marvel, DC, and everybody.
I was going to ask, will we see more of your foreign stuff translated and brought to America? It'd be great.
I just hope so. I don't know what to say, because it seems like at least what we do right now, it seems it's going to have some kind of echo. People like it. So I hope there's going to be, you know, my books are excusable enough to publish them here, you know. I'd like to. But you just use common sense and go further with new stuff. That's
okay.
What I plan. But what Jason just said, he ashamed me, actually. Really. The big, 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 four or five big credit should go to Will Dennis, because what he sensed there doesn't, you know, it's without price, you know, it's just priceless.
Absolutely. Know? No, you're a wonderful Julia, how about you ask the same question? Will we see any of your work in America, some of your other work, your foreign work?
I hope so, but I wanted to say that I love Will Dennis too.
Atta girl. Well, I'm a big fan of Will's as well. He's got a great eye for talent. The cast of Scalped is clearly an example of that. Continued success on the book. Thank you very much for talking to me. And, Julia's shy, so Gara, I'll tell you, we should have a longer conversation about more of your career. It'd be a pleasure to talk to you.
Whenever you want. It's a pleasure talking to you, really. I mean it.
Thank you. One of the reasons why I like to come to the big cons is it gives me the opportunity to see guys I don't normally get to see, and here's one of them right now, Aaron Campbell, who does beautiful work for Dynamite. He wowed us on the Sherlock Holmes series and is wowing us again on Green Hornet Year One. It's a pleasure to see Aaron.
Good to meet you, man.
And, dude, I've been a big fan of what Matt's been writing, and I've enjoyed what you've been drawing. Tell me about drawing the Green Hornet and Kato.
Oh, it's been a dream come true working with Matt. He's, you know, when I was in high school, I collected Grendel, and, you know, when Nick said we'd like to put you on the book with Matt Wagner, I about fainted. So it's been an awesome experience. Matt is really kind of like my comic book mentor at this point, because I'm so fresh, and he has really, really helped me with my pacing and my layouts and
really?
And just everything, every aspect. He's really, you know, taken it up a notch for me. So it's just been a great experience working on this book.
Well, you know, the Sandman Mystery Theater that he did, you know, the character was really, in a lot of ways, based on, you know, Green Hornet. Green Hornet predated all that stuff. So it really made sense when I heard that Matt was doing the book. And I just love your realistic style. It's got a great, perfect, pulpy feel for the era and certainly for the hero. And I felt the same way about Sherlock Holmes as well. I mean, I really think, you know, your stories really fit these kind of archetypes that Dynamite is kind of, you know, latched onto.
Yeah, I'm really drawn to the classic comic characters, because, you know, as an illustrator, I was always drawn to classic, you know, pre-1950s illustration. And I love that old, you know, bare bones, no frills storytelling, and you know, it's all about the moment, you know, that perfect moment, and that's really what I'm going after. Plus, you know, I'm taking a bit of a, you know, cinematic, you know, approach to this, and it's really given me a chance to explore some darker imagery and just especially expand my period work, which I love doing period work because I love the research. I love really making a place and a time come alive and making really kind of trying to transport as much as I can the viewer into this world.
Are there artists, Golden Age artists, that you admire and, you know, are incorporating some of your style in what they did before?
Well, you know, all of the original, like, Sherlock illustrators are big influences for me, Paget and Fawcett, and, of course, all the Brandywine guys, Andrew Wyeth and Howard Pyle. All of those classic Golden Age illustrators, you know, have always been a big influence for me. So even if I'm not, you know, exactly trying to work the way they do, there's a lot, I think, that I've taken from them in terms of the way that I draw and I approach a page. So
cool. Is the Green Hornet year one, is it an ongoing, or is it just the year one story, and then you guys are wrapping up?
Well, Matt's on the book till 12, and I'm definitely on the book till 12. After that, we're not quite sure where it's going to go. I've talked to Dynamite a little bit. They have a few ideas, which I think that they're keeping tight-lipped at the moment. So I think as it gets closer to issue 12, we'll see.
Okay. Well, you know, I know people are nervous about the movie and are speculative at best about the movie. You know, I'm a huge Green Hornet fan, even the old radio show, and that's what I think this book captures. The Harvey series is being reprinted now by Dynamite, too, the original comic series. But I really think you guys are afforded the opportunity to tell sophisticated stories in a way that the Golden Age guys, you know, they were playing to 10-year-olds, and you guys are playing to a much more adult audience. And I think it's working out great.
Yeah, I definitely like the more serious tack that Matt's taking, because I think a lot of these characters were really turned into sort of farcical characters back in the 60s. And not necessarily that there's anything bad about what happened in the, you know, 1960s Green Hornet series. You know, it's iconic. But it's really nice to get back to the origin of that character and really develop who those guys were.
And I agree with Matt, too, that these characters make sense, really, in the era in which they were created. And I know Matt's a firm believer of that. And again, I think your style demonstrates why they work well with the Tommy guns, with the gangsters, the crusading newspaper. I mean, you know, I think it really, you know, again, that era fits the character. And I think it really, if you want good Green Hornet, you really do need to go back to that Depression era Green Hornet.
Yeah, I totally agree, because, you know, he is, you know, he's a man of his time, and I think I remember hearing Matt talk about, you know, when you take a character that was created in that time and you transport him, you know, to the modern world, he really loses a lot of, you know, his viability as, you know, something you could believe. So, you know, Green Hornet, he represents an archetype of the modern superhero. So he's very bare bones. He's very, you know, sort of jury-rigged, kind of. So I think in a modern world, he becomes Batman, basically. So
no, I understand, man. Well, continued success. It's really beautiful stuff. You can find his work at Dynamite, Green Hornet Year One, and reach back and grab that great Sherlock Holmes trade that he did as well. Wonderful stuff from Aaron Campbell. Good to see you, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm telling Stuart Moore right now how much I enjoyed his IDW work. He did a great one-shot, Captain's Log, and it featured Christopher Pike. And I'm a big Jeffrey Hunter fan, so I'm always happy to see Christopher Pike's face. Rich Greenwood did fine in the new movie, but, you know, for me, it's always been Jeffrey Hunter as the real Captain Pike.
Well, all I can say to that is beep.
very true. And it was. It was a great story that if people remember the Star Trek Menagerie two-parter, it kind of really does kind of fill in the details after Talos IV, leading up to his eventual fate that we know from the episode.
Yeah, well, what struck me was in the original story, in the Menagerie, he's kind of, Captain Pike's kind of doubting himself. He's not sure about his command anymore. And by the end of the hour, you know, he's figured out his problems, you know. But I somehow thought it wasn't quite that simple, that a man like that would doubt himself for a long time, be unsure about his place in Starfleet and what he was doing. And that sort of was the springboard for the whole thing. That and that I wanted to play it, play off the two women in his life and sort of go in a direction most fans wouldn't expect.
And again, yeah, from the episode, you get that kind of hint, much like in the same case with Captain Kirk and Yeoman Rand, that Yeoman Colt and certainly has feelings for Pike.
Yeah, yeah, and that's and Yeoman Colt was probably the least developed character in the original story, so I wanted to do some more with her.
No, it's a tremendous one shot, man, and you're doing wonderful Marvel work. Namor the First Mutant. It's been a wonderful series. Who's your artist on that?
Ariel Olivetti is the regular artist. He's. I'm actually looking forward to meeting him this weekend. I haven't met him before. But, he's doing beautiful stuff. He has a great sort of textural sense for the underwater books, and he just draws very, very powerful characters, which really works for this book.
Tremendous. And this week, a one-shot came out of Howard the Duck and Spider-Man. Yes. Tell us about that.
Spider-Man Back in Quack, or as I call it, Human Slavery for Beginners, which is the title of the main story. that book is kind of my tribute to the late Steve Gerber. But what I wanted to do was not do the kind of tribute people do too often, where they just try to slavishly imitate the earlier writer's work. I wanted to take the character, Howard the Duck, who's been handled well by some writers and not as well by others, and just sort of cut him loose one more time and see what I could do with him and place him in a very, very modern context. And hopefully that's the way it works. Plus, it has a 8-page Man-Thing story in the back, which kind of brings the circle around because Howard's first solo stories were in the back of Giant-Sized Man-Thing. So that's my tiny-sized Man-Thing, as I tell everyone. And I am secure enough to say that.
Clearly. That's excellent, man. Now I see some Fantastic Four.
That's 1 month to live.
1 month to live. Tell us about that.
1 month to live was a 5-issue event over the month of September, one per week, with different writers. One of whom I just met at the Rob Williams. I just met here at the con for the first time, and we each wrote different issues. Rick Remender did the two bookends on either end, and it was remarkably smooth. It's just basically the story of an ordinary man in the Marvel Universe who is involved in a radioactive accident that gives him superpowers and cancer. So he has 1 month to live, and what does he do with it? Does he become a hero? Does he become a villain? Does he just lie down and die? And in my story is the cosmic end of it, where he goes out into space with the Fantastic Four and has to save the universe from Ego, the Living Planet. And that was just great fun.
That's really cool. Very cool. And Marvel fans will remember the name John Proctor from a wonderful book from Epic called Gun Theory. Daniel Way was the writer on that. And you and John have teamed up now for a new original graphic novel.
That's right. It's called Shadrach Stone, and it just came out. It's a giant-scale project about conspiracy theories and lies. It's about the biggest liar in the world who, after a traumatic national event, becomes inducted into a whole new world of alternate realities, and basically his entire world is turned upside down. I can't say too much more about it without giving too much away, but John did art and color on it, and it's just phenomenal. It's the best work he's ever done.
That's excellent, man. And yeah, I had not heard about him since Gun Theory. I wasn't sure where he was
for a while. He did a book called The Black Diamond with Larry Young, but this has been consuming his life for the past year and a half.
Wow. Well, that's great, man. No, and it's 1995. I'm sure it's available through Diamond. Is there a website that they can order it through as well?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. Has it? It's in stock now. Diamond. It can be ordered from Diamond. Also, it can be ordered directly from the Penny Farthing Press website, which is pfpress.com.
Is there interest for you, Stuart, to do a regular monthly, or are you happy to do these miniseries? And
Namor is a regular monthly.
Oh, it is. It is an ongoing now. Okay, fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I'd love to do more. So yeah. So, yeah.
Oh, that's great. All right, I assumed it was a miniseries. That's terrific. What can you tease us with as far as future plans for Namor?
The first four issues are tied into the first storyline in the new X-Men comic, which is the giant vampire war, Curse of the Mutants. And our story is pretty much independent of the main storyline. It basically takes the underwater vampire race and explore. They gave me great freedom to kind of flesh them out, explore them, and tell our own story that is very, very much a Namor story, as opposed to just a tie-in. After that, issue 5 is a special spotlight on the different sides of Namor's, it's called Faces. It's a different side of Namor's personality over the years. And after that, we're launching into another big storyline that I can't talk about yet.
Okay. Well, in general terms, because I do think it's interesting to put Namor in the X world, but also, I mean, this is a character that does go back to Marvel's origins. I'm thrilled that projects like Chris Gage and Alex Ross doing the Invaders, you know, showing that prominently. Jim Hammond is back. So, I mean, that's the thing. There are so many great Marvel heroes to pull into the series and stuff. And I'm expect to see some of these guys popping up in Namor's series?
Yes, definitely. The closest ties will be to the X-Men. There's a particular X-Men character who's going to become semi-regular in the book. But also, Namor has a past now with Emma Frost, the White Queen, and we want to sort of play that up. I like the triangle between the two of them and Cyclops, and there will probably be more with that, either in our book or in Uncanny or both. Like, we're working out the details.
That's terrific, man. Well, you know, for years you were one of our favorite editors, and I'm glad you're back writing and everything. You're putting out great products, so continued success, and look forward to reading more of Namor, and we will check out the new OGN, and I'm sure it might still be on the racks, folks. Captain's Log, Christopher Pike. Good stuff from Stuart Moore. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
It's everyone's favorite comic book couple. It's been the case for a long time, and I don't mean to say that in any disrespectful way. But
John and Virginia Romita, I think you're referring to, isn't it?
It's Walter and Wheezy Simonson. It's a pleasure to see you both. Thank you.
Well, hi. Thanks for interviewing us.
It's my pleasure.
Talking to.
Oh, I think so. And Wheezy, I'll start with you because tell me about coming back to X Factor Forever. That must have been interesting when they proposed doing that.
Oh, yeah, it was really fun. You know, I wasn't sure it was a good idea when I first heard it, but then when I got to thinking about it, I remembered, once I went back and read the old stuff, a story that I had wanted to tell that I never got to tell, so I got the chance, and it was great. I wouldn't mind doing another one.
Oh, very good. Excellent.
Oh, we'll see. You know, maybe I could do a second 5-issue limited or whatever. I prefer doing it that way. A long series with a lot of characters is hard on an artist. It's better to give them a little bit of breathing room and a little bit of time to develop things.
Awesome. Walter, you've been working on a very cool original graphic novel, and I don't want to tip your hand, so I will let you say...
I'm getting closer to the edge.
You know, and that's been the great thing, is that a lot of cons, I've had the pleasure of seeing a couple pages, and it looks amazing.
Well,
so what do you want to say about it?
Now we're on the radio, podcast. I'll show you some more art. Looks great, doesn't it? Actually, I'll show you in a second. But I'm actually closer. I finally, the entire thing is now written. It's 6 short stories, ranging from, like, I don't know, 8 or 9 pages, about 15 or 16. All but 2 have now been lettered. The other 2 are with John Workman, where DC has graciously allowed me to get the stuff lettered in the boards, kind of in our old school, very old school. So I can really do, I'm in control of the design of the page in a way that's not possible generally these days. And I'm doing a Viking Prince story right now in this series, the sequence I'm doing.
Outstanding.
My problem there is that I decided to do some extremely elaborate border and balloon borders for the panels and balloon borders. And I haven't done that in about 35 years. The last time I did it was in the Hyborian Age for Marvel. And I learned my lesson that it took me 35 years to forget that. And now I'm going to have 35 before I do this again. I can't tell you. But I am getting close to the end. I'm hoping another 6 months or a little less to wrap it up. So I would think it'd be out by the end of the year, next year sometime, somewhere in there. Laverne is coloring it. Kaczerski is coloring it. And I've seen 4 pages so far, the introductory 4 pages. They just look great. I could not be happier the coloring he's doing. We've talked about it a lot, and he's just doing a marvelous job. So I think in the end, I think it's probably some of my best work by the time I get finished.
That's great, man. And I know, again, being able to see the pages is very ambitious from an artistic standpoint, and you're really stretching yourself. And I think a lot of people are going to be really pleased at the end result. It's based on the pages that I've seen so far. I got to sneak a few pages, we see, and see things here and there.
I'll sneak you a few more pages here after we finish talking.
Oh, awesome. All right. Fantastic. You know, and I must slightly embarrass you, Walter, because I spoke to John Paul Leone earlier.
Okay.
And mentioned what you had told me in terms of working with him on Vigilante. And really that you said that you found yourself learning stuff from the way he uses blacks and everything, correct?
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, well, I mean, he's one of my former students, but he's a master of black and white and design, and it's a very different sensibility than one I have, so I'm happy to have him finish my stuff and fix it for me. And then hopefully I'll be able to fix it myself next time around.
Weezy, I mean, when you read books now and everything, I mean, there's a slight difference, I guess, in some of the guys doing now, the decompressed stories and things like that. Are you seeing things that you kind of are incorporating when you write stuff?
I suppose so. I kind of, mostly what I've been asked to do has been more retro.
Okay.
And I've been asked to compress stories instead of decompress them.
Well, these prices, I think we're happy to see some compressed stories. That's
so,
all right.
I haven't had a chance to really do a decompressed story.
Okay.
I mean, X Factor Forever was 5 issues, and there was a lot to fit into those issues. So it was squish, 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 squish. Not decompressed at all, and then I'm doing several other things for Marvel right now, none of which have room to be
decompressed.
One of the things I'm doing is I'm doing a couple issues with Chris Claremont, actually.
Interesting.
On we're doing the Dead X-Men and the Chaos King stuff.
Very cool.
So, but there's no room to decompress there either. So.
Okay, and you've been doing a lot of cool young adult books as well.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of books recently. Although, you know, I did a batch of books for a while, and then I kind of have got into doing comics again, but now I think I'm going back into books.
Okay.
I really enjoy doing them. It's
fantastic.
Really fun.
Well, and it's good that, you know, someone that knows the characters and stuff is writing the stories. I think it makes a better experience. So, yeah, that's terrific. It's always good to see you guys. I'm not going to take more of your time because I know there are always people that are waiting.
Wrap it up happily.
All right, well, let's wrap it up happily then. No, seriously, thanks a lot, guys. It's good seeing you both.
And now we'll give you a sneak preview of some more of the artwork from my project.
All right, well, then you guys are going to have to wait a few months, but then we'll all check it out. Walter and Louise Simonson, thank you very much.
Our pleasure. Thank you for having us.
We appreciate it. Bye. Yeah.
All right, I'm catching them right as they're closing the lights on Saturday. It's John Paul Leon, and it's great to see you, John. I've been a fan for a long time. The Wintermen turned out fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
And I'm looking at some of the stuff. I see some stuff. Is this from Die Hard Year One?
Yes, those are some covers from Die Hard Year One. Yep.
Very cool. I spoke to you earlier off the air and mentioned, first of all, how much I enjoyed last year's Sergeant Fury and the Howlers that you did with Jesse Alexander. Was it Shotgun? I'm trying to remember the title.
Shotgun Opera.
There you go. Shotgun Opera. Yeah. Fantastic, man. Really classic style. It was your style, but I think a lot of your layouts kind of evoke that Kirby feel.
Oh, cool. Thanks. I really wasn't that familiar with the Kirby Howling Commandos work. So, you know, the challenge with that stuff was sort of making it convincing because it's World War II and keeping it sort of fun. You know?
Absolutely. Well, and that was a great, I mean, and there were so many great scenes of not only them fighting, but them relaxing.
Right.
And let's say relaxing in an adult fashion.
right. Cool. Yeah. I'm glad you liked it. Yeah.
It was great.
It was fun. Yeah.
No, you know, and I mean, yeah, you and Jesse were a great team, and, you know, it's always great to see your stuff, and I know, obviously, your stuff is so detailed, and it's, you know, hard to maintain a monthly schedule and everything. What do you have coming up?
Right now I'm working on a 4-issue series called Batman Creature of the Night, written by Kurt Busiek.
Wonderful.
And it's sort of a companion piece to the Secret Identity, Superman Secret Identity. It's sort of the Batman version of that story. So it's 4 48-pagers. So that's keeping me pretty busy these days.
Wow.
Yeah, as well as DMZ covers every month. So.
Oh, terrific. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Brian Woods series. We all love it. So that's very cool. Yeah, and that's a great book that obviously calls to your style and everything. I mean, this kind of, you know, war-torn New York and everything.
Yeah, very graphic. I admired those covers even before, you know, I was asked to even be a part of the book. And so it's very cool to, you know, have an opportunity to, you know, contribute.
Cool. Do you ever want to do any writing?
You know, don't we all, right? can I? That remains to be seen. But, you know, the dream is sort of to sort of at one point write and draw my own material, yeah.
It was neat earlier, I mentioned to you, too, because last Baltimore, Walter Simonson was showing pages that he had done a vigilante, and, you know, collaboration with you. And it was really neat to hear. He said, oh, you know, what he does with blacks is really incredible, and he's really kind of taught me things. And it was funny to learn that you're a student of Walter, so it's kind of neat that he's learning from you as you're learning from him.
Yeah, well, he might have been a little generous there. Walter's the man, and, you know, for me that was just an honor and, you know, a learning experience. Definitely. That was,
well, he said it in front of me and Brian Bendis, so he wasn't trying to impress Bendis, I think, by saying that. So we both thought that was really cool.
Very cool. That was sort of a dream come true to work with
Excellent.
Walter that way. So.
Well, continued success, man. It's always a pleasure to see your work. And the Boulevard is a great studio, and I just spoke to Trevor Goring. You'll hear that in just a couple seconds. But Always beautiful work from John Paul Leon. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you very much, John.
All right, I'm hanging out with Cliff Chang at his booth right now. It's near the end of Saturday night, but it's good to see him. And, you know, the last time we talked, it was the week before the Brave and Bold?
Yeah, it was Brave and the Bold, number 33.
Which was, like, knockout gorgeous. I got to my store too late, and it promptly sold out. And, are they reprinting it or anything?
It actually was reprinted in the recent trade paperback, the JMS issues of Brave and the Bold. I think it was called, it's a horrible title. It's something like Team-Ups from Brave and the Bold. I think that's... That's what it's called.
Well, the good news is at least it's like, you know, quality inside the pages, if not in the title. So that's cool. I know you got some stuff coming up. You told me about a project coming up starting in December.
Yeah, I'm doing 3 issues of Zatanna with Paul Dini. It's really fun. I've always wanted to work with Paul Dini. And, to finally get the chance to do it is great. He's got a lot of... he writes a lot of personality into the characters and into the script. And it's been a great... fun challenge to try and bring that out. So I'm doing 3 issues 8, 9, and 10. It involves Zatanna and her fear of puppets.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, we got a taste of your Zatanna in Brave and Bold, obviously.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. This is a little different, too, because, it's like Dini's take on Zatanna.
Okay.
You know, it's mostly like, you know, JMS.
So does that influence your art choices for the story?
I think the personality is different. So it's... my depiction is slightly different. It's not going to be, night and day, but it's a little different.
Very cool. And also, big anticipation for something that's coming up in 2011, you and Brian Azzarello.
Yeah. It should be good. I'm not sure how much I can talk about it just yet, but
okay.
They haven't announced anything. But if you, if you do the math, you might be able to think about, what
okay.
we're doing.
All right, there you go. All right, we'll keep it coy then.
I'm going to call it Dr. 14.
Did we ever talk about that book of yours?
I don't know if we did, yeah.
You know, I got to tell you, it's I expect that kind of art from you because the Dr. 13 story was great.
Best, yeah.
But I don't think anyone was expecting that kind of humor from Brian. And
no,
I know I've talked to him about it and stuff. But seriously, what a great project. And it was, one of those co-features that I think might have, slid by people.
Yeah.
And I know that it's really become a very popular trade, and I think it's terrific.
Yeah, it was a blast to work on it. I think, if you know Brian personally, you know how funny he can be, but you haven't seen it in print. And so working on that was just a blast, just kind of seeing him have fun. And he would give me the script, I'd have fun with it, and we'd just go back and forth. So it was a really fantastic collaborative project, and it just makes me more excited to work with him again soon.
Excellent, man. All right, you got a customer waiting, so we'll cut this short. But continued success, and when it's time and we announce that project, we'll sit down for a full-blown
Definitely.
One. I don't want to just have you for these 5-minute word balloons.
Right.
We need a long one, man.
Okay.
Awesome.
All right, thanks, John.
All right, excellent. Thank you, Cliff Chang. All right, it's Sunday in Artist Alley, and I'm here with Jamal Igel, one of the fine artists from D.C., who's entertained us for years, most recently doing Supergirl, and it's good to see you, my man. You and Sterling kicking ass.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to see you, too, man. It's busy. It's really busy.
Seriously, what a nutty con. I mean, I was saying yesterday, today, and looks like it's a little more under control, slightly, but not really that much difference.
No, not too much, and it's a really big difference from usually on a Sunday at a show. It's a little bit dead, and this is like a Friday. It's really it's incredible that they've gotten. I mean, New York finally has like a viable comic book show again, and I'm thrilled. Absolutely thrilled.
Very cool. Well, as I said, you and Sterling have put new energy in Supergirl, and it's been a fun ride. We're enjoying the Bizarro Supergirl story, and I think that's been cool. I understand that the run for you is coming to an end.
Yeah, Sterling and I are leaving with issue 59.
Wow.
So, and what's that?
Nick Spencer?
Nick Spencer, yeah. Nick Spencer and Bernard Chang are going to take over starting with 60.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Excellent, man.
So
well,
one more story in us before
okay.
we go.
Well, can you tease what's coming up?
We are actually tying up threads that we started in issue 34.
Wonderful.
You can believe it. We're going to get back to Supergirl's relationship with Cat Grant. We got a little Toy Man action going on. It's really cool. We're just going to be wrapping, put a nice little bow on our run.
Classic Toy Man or young Asian Toy Man?
No, classic Toy Man.
Oh, very nice.
Classic Winslow Shot. It's a very the opening of issue 58 is actually a homage to the Killing Joke.
Cool.
So
wow, I saw Brian Boland earlier and everything. That's very cool, man. No, honestly, it's been a great run, and I mentioned to your wife, based on our conversation, I think the style that you've given to Lana Lang has been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And really, man, no, I think you guys took Supergirl when it was really filled with chaos and righted the ship, and I think are leaving the book in good hands and a strong foundation to build on.
I'd like to think so. I hope so. It's been awesome, and it's been just the reaction from the fans has just been great. The critical reaction that we've gotten for the last 2 years has just been more than I could have possibly expected, and I walk away fulfilled, and I feel like I've added something to the series and added something to the mythos, and besides the shorts, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. But it's just been a lot of fun, and honestly, the only reason why I'm leaving is there's two reasons why I decided to leave, which is one, I wanted to leave while I was on a high note. I didn't want to be on it too long and just start to lose steam on it. I wanted to leave while my energy was still fresh, and I thought it was just time. You know, after 2 years, I just thought it was time to pass it on to another pair of hands, and let's see what they can do.
Well, you've left your stamp on the character. I think that's great. And, yeah, why not? Let's explore new things. I mean, I think a lot of the projects you've been given have given you the opportunity to do fun things with the DC Universe. And obviously with the dozens of characters that they have, if not hundreds, then there's room to go to other more challenges. So wonderful.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah. Terrific, man. Well, continued success. I know you can't. I know you can't talk about what's next.
Right.
When you can, let me know.
I will.
And you'll come back. And I finally learned how to do Skype properly, so we can have a nice Skype interview.
Awesome.
You know, my VCR stopped blinking 12, and I've learned how to do Skype. Old men do learn new tricks. So good seeing you, man.
You too, man. It's great seeing you, John.
Awesome. I was hoping to talk to Greeks at the con.
All right, good.
And I saw one on Friday, Pete Tomasi, and I saw another one on Friday, Chris Iliopoulos. But this is the Greek I was waiting for. It's Christos Gage. It's been far too long. It's good to see you, my man.
Good to see you too, sir.
And we're here at the Avatar booth, and Chris was telling me about Absolution, which the first season has wrapped up, but you give us the details.
Yes, the premise of Absolution is it's set in a world where superheroes are part of the police force, and John Dusk is one of them, and he gets sick of seeing criminals get away with things, so he starts killing them. It's like as if the TV show Dexter, if Dexter was a superhero. But our book goes where Dexter never does, because in it, his partners and girlfriend find out what he's up to and start coming after him. And then the second season, which comes out in 2011, will deal with the ramifications of that. So first season is wrapped, second season is in progress. I've written half of it already. So
excellent. I'm standing in front of you, and I see both the softcover and the hardback are available from Avatar, so Jeff, definitely check it out. Roberto Villacava is your artist.
Yes, he was the artist for the first season. I think we're going to have someone new for the second season, but that remains to be seen at this
time.
Excellent.
Always good international art talent from Avatar, so that's very cool.
Yeah.
As we're speaking this weekend, it was announced you have a Marvel exclusive. Congratulations. Absolution is not affected, though.
Yes. Thank you very much. I just went exclusive with Marvel, which I'm very excited about. Marvel felt like home already. I was already doing a lot of work for them. Avengers Academy, Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, Invaders Now. So, you know, we just kind of made it official, and I'm now Marvel exclusive, but I am able to continue on with my creator-owned stuff, such as Absolution. And the only book that I actually had to leave was G.I. Joe Cobra.
Right.
Which is in good hands with my co-writer Mike Costa, and the good news is Marvel very graciously allowed me to stay on it long enough to complete the Chuckles trilogy that we began
Fantastic.
A couple of years ago. Yeah, so I'm sticking around long enough to finish that up, and then it's all Mike from then on. But he's been doing, you know, he's great. He's been doing great work on the two specials he wrote on his own. So anyone who's read those knows he doesn't need me. Book's in good hands, and I'm looking forward to reading it as a fan in the future.
Well, fellow podcaster Chris Niesman raved about what you guys did on G.I. Joe Cobra, and because I'm a little too old for those G.I. You know, I go back to the full figure G.I. Joes, but I mean, I still appreciate the fandom and the phenomenon. And Chris said, "Hey, man, that's just good military espionage action that you're finding in G.I. Joe Cobra." So
well, I never read G.I. Joe comics either, so I didn't know about it. Mike Costa is the one who knew all the details,
okay.
So I'm just trying to write a good espionage-flavored story, and hopefully we succeeded. People seem to feel that way. So
excellent. Last time I saw you, Area 10 had just come out. I want us to correct.
Yes, yes.
With Chris Sonder, your Vertigo crime novel, and again, it's outstanding, and I know it's available at bookstores, and I know it's something that Chris drew a long time ago, and you wrote a long time ago, but really it's a wonderful story as well.
Yeah, I mean, because it's so long, and it's a graphic novel, it was a while in production, but so I think we did it in about 2007. Just came out this, last year, right? And it's been very well received. The soft cover will be out soon. Chris Somney, of course, is an amazing talent who's getting the acclaim he really deserves now on his work on Thor and other things. So I'm very pleased to have been able to work with him early on. And it's just, it's a beautiful black and white Vertigo crime book. And if people haven't checked it out, I hope they will. I'm really thrilled with the response it's gotten.
It's a really solid police procedural. It's really, really great. Some very bizarre graphic violence that I think suits Vertigo, suits Somni, it suits you. So I love the story. It was really great, man.
Cool. I like it.
And, you know, you've carved your own corner of the Marvel Universe with the Avenger books, Avengers Academy. And also, I love what's happening with you and... I'm blanking right now, but hold on one second. With you and Alex Ross on the Invaders series. I think that's great. I'm glad to see the Classic Five, because we have to shove Bucky and Toro in there as well. But the team is back, and they're facing some modern problems that started back in World War II. It's a very interesting story.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm glad that you forgot Alex Ross and remembered me. That's very flattering.
It's Sunday.
And also insane. But no, but it's been great. I mean, Alex's love for Golden Age characters is well known. He's done some other projects with the Invaders, and he set up a situation where now the original Invaders are back together for the first time since the war. They're all alive and active again for the first time since the war. So it's been really interesting. I mean, Bucky is now Captain America. Captain America is now Steve Rogers' super soldier. So we're reuniting them, and they are, as you said, they're facing a threat that began in the war but is rearing its head again now. And in issue 2, which comes out very soon, that issue is almost entirely a flashback to World War II, and we see the origin of this event, and then future issues are all in the present day when they deal with the ramifications. And as the solicitations show, in addition to the Nazi villains you expect, like Warrior Woman and Master Man, there's a big bad by the name of Shuma Gorath, who for a lot of people, they only know him from the Marvel vs. Capcom game. But no, he was in Doctor Strange before. He's been in Conan. He's an elder Lovecraftian god, and it's a different kind of foe for the Invaders to face, and you know, I hope people dig it.
Well, I'm glad you're back on Captain America. You know, one of the first things I remember you writing was that one shot that you and Jeremy Hahn did with the flashback to the Civil War tie-in, where Iron Man and Captain America, back when he was the captain in the 80s, that wonderful crossover.
Yep, and even before that, I worked on Union Jack with Mike Perkins.
One of my favorite stories.
Thank you. And Union Jack is in this. He's the only one who's not the World War II version.
Spitfire's there,
but she's the original. But this Union Jack is our Union Jack from the present day, so it was great to work on him again.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, no, that Union Jack series is truly one of my favorites. Got to see Perkins earlier this weekend, too.
Yeah. I love Mike Perkins. My wife adores him. We saw him last night. He's just one of the nicest guys in comics and one of the most talented. And I'm staking my claim right here. When he's done with The Stand, I want to work with him again.
Good.
So everybody else can just back off.
Excellent, man. No, you guys are a great team. And, you know, and of course you did the House of M Avengers thing as well.
Yes, we did.
So, and we mentioned a brief thing about a Capcom game. And, of course, you're working on a Captain America video game, huh?
Yes, I've written the Captain America Super Soldier video game.
Is that the game that's here at the show?
Yes, they announced it first time early this week, and they've been unspooling a demo. It's even what they call pre-alpha, so it's still early in the development. But it's really fun. I got to play it myself. They're not letting anyone play it. The Sega people have to play it for you, because there's still, like, if you go down the wrong corridor, you fall off the edge of the earth, and that's all. But I got to play it. It's a lot of fun. You feel like Captain America. You get to throw the shield and bust it off three different guys and come back to you. You get to use the agility. If they shoot at you and you raise your shield at the right time, you can actually deflect bullets back at the guys.
Cool.
So it's just a lot of fun. We got villains from the comics in there. We have Madame Hydra, Baron Strucker, Arnim Zola, the Red Skull. And I'm particularly proud of having gotten Iron Cross, an obscure Invaders villain in there, who's sort of like a Nazi Iron Man.
I remember him.
So it's just, I mean, I'm really thrilled with it. It's been a great experience. My first time writing a video game. The guys have been great. Both Sega and this developer, Next Level Games, which a lot of people have, you know, I guess were disappointed with the Iron Man 2 game, which Sega did, but they've heard the complaints, and this is a new developer, and this game, you know, judge it on its own merits. It's a lot of fun, and I hope people dig it. It makes you feel like Captain America. Like, when I played Batman Arkham Asylum, I felt like I was Batman.
That's exactly what I was thinking watching the demo. It looks very much like that in that kind of first-person way.
Well, yeah. I mean, what I loved about that game is, as a comic book fan, as a Batman fan, I felt like Batman when I was playing the game. This one makes you feel like Captain America. It's not like, you know, you don't play it and say, wait a second, Captain America is like shooting lasers. You know what I mean? He's Captain America. He's got a shield. He's kicking guys' butts and you know, throwing a shield at them and bouncing it off several guys' heads, and it comes back to him. So it's a lot of fun. I hope if the rest of the game continues like what I play, I think it'll be a really good game.
Outstanding, man. And I love what you've been doing with Avengers Academy. I mean, you and Slot started the initiative. You came on and were co-writing it with them. You've taken the ball since and made it your own. And I like how these latest issues have been breaking out. Well, we're learning more about the team, and we're learning about the individuals.
We are. First six issues, because they're mostly new characters, I wanted to introduce them to the readership and have each issue be from the point of view of a different student. People seem to really like the characters, which is great. This is a tough market for
new
characters these days, but people have been really good about giving us a chance and responding very well. So once that's done with issue six, we'll start to show a little, weight things a little more equally, get into the teachers more. In issue seven, we have the long-awaited return of Hank Pym as Giant Man.
Cool.
We're not going backwards with the character. All the character development's still there, but we just felt like, and I felt like, that's the most iconic form of the character. You know, whenever you see an alternate world Avengers, a future Avengers, Hank Pym is always Giant Man.
True.
He's Giant Man in the Superhero Squad MMO. He's Giant Man in the cartoon. And this isn't a case of, oh, he's Giant Man in the cartoon, so Marvel made us do this. No, this is something I wanted to do. Just take him to what I feel is his most pure form as a superhero, the one I respond to viscerally the most, a guy who grows giant and also small. He's still got the antenna. He can do the Ant-Man stuff. So anyway, that's in issue seven, and he fights the Absorbing Man, which is a great giant versus giant battle.
Very good.
In issue eight, we delve into the ramifications of when the Hood attacked Tiger and beat her up and had his henchmen record it. And now that the Hood's been taken down, one of those henchmen is on the run and needs money, so he sells the DVD to one of these websites that puts out like celebrity sex tapes. And so the students see it, and Tigra has to deal with it, and the students have to deal with it. Then in issue 9, Taskmaster shows up. A lot of people have been asking for Taskmaster. I loved writing him in Initiative. He'll be back. Some people have speculated he might be the father of Finesse, one of the students, and we'll be exploring that. So I'm really looking forward to what's coming down the line in Academy, and I just want to express my thanks to the fans who have really embraced the book. I hope they'll continue to embrace it and recommend it to their friends so we can have a nice long run. And I think I am allowed to say that we are going to be doing extra issues of Avengers Academy in 2011. Just putting it out more. Sometimes it'll double ship. You know, I'll be writing all the issues because of, you know, the double ship. Sometimes there will be a guest artist.
Okay.
It's just like people like it, so we're giving them more. You know?
That's fantastic, man.
Yeah.
Very good. Continued success, Christos. And it's been far too long. We'll get you on a real word balloon. We'll get you on a long one.
Absolutely.
But I'm happy to see it.
I keep saying that, and I've still never done one.
No, that's not true. We have done one.
We have done one.
We absolutely did. We totally have done a long one.
Oh,
absolutely.
I remember now.
Exactly.
Now.
No, and it's fair for you not to remember because it has been that long.
It was a while.
But I understand.
To do another one.
There you go. Exactly. I'm letting the Greeks down. But this is good, man. No, congratulations.
Thank
I'm really
you
glad.
Very much.
And you're doing wonderful work, so keep it up.
Thank you. Really good to see you. I've had a great time at the show. Got a picture with Joe Simon.
Nice.
Got a sketch from Joe Kubert.
Awesome.
Got a sketch from Larry Hama. Got Chris Claremont's autograph.
Very impressed.
I'm just rolling and rolling, having a great time. And, thank you, everybody, for making it possible for me to do this and pretend like it's work, because it's not.
Way to go, Chris Gage. Good seeing you, man.
You too. Thank you.
Oh, this is good. This is the international portion of the podcast. It's good to see Simon Fraser and Robbie Morrison. It's wonderful to meet Robbie, and that Simon. It's always been a pleasure because we met through Activate, and your fine work with Lily McKenzie, and glad to see that it's continuing in the Judge Dredd magazine.
Absolutely, it's great to see you again, John. Last time we saw each other was in Baltimore, I think.
Indeed, last year.
Last year, yeah. When I was publishing, the Activate Primer came out. I'm doing a signing for that later on today, but
excellent.
Right now we're signing Nicolai Dante for 2000 AD at the 2000 AD table at NY Comic Con.
Outstanding. And Robbie, it's called America, and a very evocative cover. What can you tell us about the series? Oops, the story. Oh my God, what can you tell us? I kill everything here. For their listeners, I just destroyed their entire selection here. See, it's Sunday, so I've lost all muscle control.
To be honest, I'll probably have to read the back cover to remind myself what
please.
It's about.
That's wonderful.
Nicolai Dante, now operating as the Sword of the Tsar, is sent on a mission to the Imperial Russia-occupied America. It's a perfect blend of political intrigue and high-octane action, it says on the back. But even though... And that's actually probably quite true. It's so long since I wrote it, actually, I can't really remember the storyline. But yeah, basically, it's in Dante's world, it's the Russia, the Tsar basically rules the entire world. And I thought it would be quite interesting to have America as an occupied country in the way that Iraq has been occupied by America in some ways of late. I thought it would be a nice twist, and it adds a sort of political dimension that hadn't been sort of covered in Dante before, because the one thing I'd never did in the last 10 years or something was mention, obviously Dante's set in Russia, but I had never mentioned sort of the great nemesis of Russia, which was the USA, so it just seemed to make sense for this particular storyline to cover that, and I thought it was good. It was just that it's been taken over and occupied, and I suppose there's a few parallels between certain events of today, but there's still the requisite amount of swordplay, sex.
Is there any sex in it? I don't remember there's any sex in there. It was the beginning of sex rather than actual sex. We're not that European.
All right. Well, if there wasn't a slip tongue then, because I've managed to get some in every other Dante story,
That's why we like working together.
But it is that level of satire that I love about the British comics, and that's what you guys would need, especially with 2000 AD and the Dredd series and tie-ins like Nicolai Dante that I find so entertaining. And yeah, it's, you guys, I think we have clenched asses when it comes to writing sometimes, and I think you guys are a little more freewheeling and able to kind of have a lot more fun with your heroes and villains.
I'm not sure about the clenched ass sort of.
I want to ask you to inspect it to justify that.
I like to think my buttocks are fairly firm, so. I suppose it's true. I think in British writers, certainly in 2000 AD, it can be a little more adventurous, maybe. I suppose certainly with us, it's like America on the whole is a fairly serious story, but at the same point, we seem to have managed to get away with the fact that we can have a moment of slapstick comedy in one page and then turn the page and suddenly deliver something quite shocking and harrowing. And it's quite a tricky thing to pull off, but I think we've managed it. And
watch out for this Hasidic Hulk.
And Robbie, I'm not trying to pull you away from 2000 AD, but we've enjoyed your American comics. Are you going to be coming back and doing any American heroes soon?
Well, possibly, yeah. At the moment, I'm working on a comic based on the Deus Ex Human Revolution, the new computer game.
Okay.
Well, the game's due out January or February. Well, actually, early spring, I think they say the game's due out. So the comic will be released at the same time as that. So I'm working on that at the moment, which, was a Wildstorm, but obviously it'll just transfer to DC and come out under the DC banner.
Okay.
That's actually shaping up quite well. I'm quite pleased with the way it's going. The game's interesting enough. The Bible gives us plenty of room for the narrative and story, and the game's company have been quite a bit of freedom to just get down in it. I've got Trevor Hairsine doing the interior artwork.
Nice.
I've got Jim Murray, who's the lead designer of the game, doing the covers.
Fantastic.
It's great, and I'm working with the same people at well, a Wildstorm again that I, you know, have worked with in the past. So it's all working out quite well.
So the imprint's really the only thing that's changed otherwise. I mean, yeah, it's still the same people you've worked with before as far as the Wildstorm people.
At the moment, as far as I'm aware, that'll be continuing.
Yeah, we're in flux, I understand.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, it hasn't affected me in any way, you know. It's due out. So I don't know, after that, yeah, maybe I'll be doing some more sort of...
Cool.
Yeah.
And this Nicolai Dante collection, is this the last chapter in the series, or is there one more?
There'll be 10 volumes in total, and we're not quite at the stage of doing it yet, and we're kind of doing other things in the meantime, but this coming year will basically be the wind down, the last chapter of Dante, the final climax, which we've been hinting at and alluding to for the last 15 years?
Yeah.
Really, you know, and I'm new to the character. It was the Humanoids reprints that I think introduced me to the character. Or wasn't it Rebellion? Yeah, before Rebellion. The DC stuff. Didn't you guys do?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, yeah, that was my first dice. Oh, it's a couple years ago. Yeah, I know. So, no, I'm glad to see you here, and I'll also be picking up a copy of America right now as we close the interview. So, no, it's an easy sale, Robbie. You don't have to worry. So, you had me at a low.
Somebody, you know, it's always nice to, you know, meet somebody who likes it and appreciates it. It's excellent.
It's a pleasure meeting you, and Simon, it's great seeing you as well. Continued success to both of you, and thank you for talking. And I'm always thrilled to talk to the Scottish writers, because it's no, that's good, man. It's, you know, I just talked to Miller about a month ago, so you know.
He seems to be doing fairly well at the moment, I hear. Yeah.
Does he still write comics? I don't remember.
Exactly. No. Awesome, man. Robbie Morris and Simon Fraser. Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, thanks.
All the best.
There you have it. The floor interviews from this year's New York Comic Con. Very pleased to have been there. Great meeting some new people. Great catching up with old friends. I hope you enjoyed today's coverage. And it was all brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where waiting for the trade has never been easier, because they give you discounts of 37% off all DC, Marvel, and Image books. Dark Horse books receive 42% off the standard retail price. Why not reach back and get Waterloo Sunset, the trade paperback from Andrew Stevenson and Trevor Goring from Image Comics. The standard retail price is $17.99, but at InStockTrades.com, just $11.33. How about some Nicholas Scott product from InStockTrades.com? How about Secret Six Depths with Gail Simone and Nicholas Scott, Carlos Rodriguez and others? The standard retail price, $14.99 at InStockTrades.com, just $9.47. You could reach back for Birds of Prey, Dead of Winter, which is the crossover with The Secret Six, written by Gail Simone, art by Nicholas Scott and Doug Hazelwood. The standard retail price, $17.99, at InStockTrades.com, $11.33. Check out all the deals. They're waiting for you at InStockTrades.com. John Sutcher saying thanks again for listening. Quick reminders, the Aw Yeah podcast with Art and Franco is up and running at iTunes. The app is also there, along with the Word Balloon app. You can check those out at the iTunes store, or just subscribe to the Aw Yeah podcast feed. We've got 7 episodes up as of this taping, and more coming. In fact, Art and Franco are going to be in Chicago this Saturday, October 23rd, at Challengers Comics on Western Avenue, just off the Western Avenue Blue Line stop on the train. Come and say hello to Art and Franco, and by all means, start listening to the Aw Yeah podcast, part of the Word Balloon Network. Don't forget, you can find Word Balloon, of course, at our home site, wordballoon.com. You'll find our archive waiting for you, well over 325 episodes and interviews with a lot of great artists, writers, various people from film and television. Subscribe to the Word Balloon feed at iTunes if you don't do it already, and do us a favor, write a review, rate the show. We certainly would appreciate your input. Questions or comments about the show, you can reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com. Follow me on Twitter under John Word Balloon, or on Facebook under my name, John Sutcher. Until next time, thanks again for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions. Copyright 2010.